Astoria. Mr. Irving's acquaintance at Montreal many years since with some of the principal partners of the Great Northwest Fur Company was the means of interesting him deeply in the varied concerns of trappers, hunters, and Indians, and in all the adventurous details connected with the commerce in peltries. Not long after his return from his late tour to the prairies, he held a conversation with his friend, Mr. John Jacob Astor of New York, in relation to an enterprise set on foot and conducted by that gentleman about the year 1812, an enterprise having for its object a participation on the most extensive scale in the fur trade carried on with the Indians in all the western and northwestern regions of North America. Finding Mr. I fully alive to the exciting interest of this subject, Mr. Astor was induced to express a regret that the true nature and extent of the enterprise, together with its great national character and importance, had never been generally comprehended, and to wish that Mr. Irving would undertake to give an account of it. To this he consented. All the papers relative to the matter were submitted to his inspection, and the volumes now before us, two well-sized octavos, are the result. The work has been accomplished in a masterly manner, the modesty of the title affording no indication of the fullness, comprehensiveness, and beauty with which a long and entangled series of detail, collected necessarily from a mass of vague and imperfect data, has been wrought into completeness and unity. Supposing our readers acquainted with the main features of the original fur trade in America, we shall not follow Mr. Irving in his vivid account of the primitive French-Canadian merchant, his jovial establishments and dependents, of the licensed traders, missionaries, voyageurs, and coureurs des bois, of the British-Canadian fur merchant, of the rise of the great company of the Northwest, its constitution and internal trade, its parliamentary hall and banqueting room, its boating, its huntings, its wassailings, and other magnificent feudal doings in the wilderness. It was the British Mackinaw Company, we presume, a company established in rivalry of the Northwest, the scene of whose main operations first aroused the attention of our government. Its chief factory was established at Michilimackinac and sent forth its pirogues by Green Bay, Fox River, and the Wisconsin to the Mississippi, and thence to all its tributary streams, in this way hoping to monopolize the trade with all the Indian tribes on the southern and western waters of our own territory, as the Northwest had monopolized it along the waters of the North. Of course, we now began to view with a jealous eye and to make exertions for counteracting the influence hourly acquired over our own aborigines by these immense combinations of foreigners. In 1796, the United States sent out agents to establish rival trading houses on the frontier, and thus, by supplying the wants of the Indians, to link their interests with ours, and to divert the trade, if possible, into national channels. The enterprise failed, being, we suppose, inefficiently conducted and supported, and the design was never afterward attempted until by the individual means and energy of Mr. Astor. John Jacob Astor was born in Waldorf, a German village near Heidelberg, on the banks of the Rhine. While yet a youth, he foresaw that he would arrive at great wealth, and leaving home took his way alone to London, where he found himself at the close of the American Revolution. An elder brother being in the United States, he followed him there. In January 1784, he arrived in Hampton Roads, with some little merchandise suited to the American market. On the passage, he had become acquainted with a countryman of his, a furrier, from whom he derived much information in regard to furs and the manner of conducting the trade. Subsequently, he accompanied this gentleman to New York and, by his advice, invested the proceeds of his merchandise in peltries. With these, he sailed to London, and having disposed of his adventure advantageously, he returned the same year, 1784, to New York, with a view of settling in the United States and prosecuting the business thus commenced. Mr. Astor's beginnings in this way were necessarily small, But his perseverance was indomitable, his integrity unimpeachable, and his economy of the most rigid kind. To these, says Mr. Irving, were added an aspiring spirit that always looked upward, a genius bold, fertile, and expansive, a sagacity quick to grasp and convert every circumstance to its advantage, and a singular and never-wavering confidence of signal success. These opinions are more than re-echoed by the whole crowd of Mr. Astor's numerous acquaintances and friends, and are most strongly insisted upon by those who have the pleasure of knowing him best. In the United States, the fur trade was not yet sufficiently organized to form a regular line of business. Mr. A. made annual visits to Montreal for the purpose of buying peltries, and as no direct trade was permitted from Canada to any country but England, he shipped them, when bought, immediately to London. This difficulty being removed, however, by the Treaty of 1795, he made a contract for furs with the Northwest Company and imported them from Montreal into the United States, thence shipping a portion to different parts of Europe as well as to the principal market in China. By the treaty just spoken of, the British possessions on our side of the lakes were given up and an opening made for the American fur trader on the confines of Canada and within the territories of the United States. Here, Mr. Astor, about the year 1807, adventured largely on his own account, his increased capital now placing him among the chief of American merchants. The influence of the Mackinaw Company, however, proved too much for him, and he was induced to consider the means of entering into successful competition. He was aware of the wish of the government to concentrate the fur trade within its boundaries in the hands of its own citizens, and he now offered, if national aid or protection should be afforded, to turn the whole of the trade into American channels. He was invited to unfold his plans, and they were warmly approved, but, we believe, little more. The countenance of the government was nevertheless of much importance, and in 1809 he procured from the legislature of New York a charter incorporating a company under the name of the American Fur Company, with a capital of $1,000,000 and the privilege of increasing it to two. He himself constituted the company and furnished the capital. The board of directors was merely nominal, and the whole business was conducted with his own resources and according to his own will. We here pass over Mr. Irving's lucid, although brief, account of the fur trade in the Pacific, of Russian and American enterprise on the northwestern coast, and of the discovery by Captain Gray in 1792 of the mouth of the River Columbia. He proceeds to speak of Captain Jonathan Carver of the British Provincial Army. In 1763, shortly after the acquisition of the Canadas by Great Britain, this gentleman projected a journey across the continent between the 43rd and 46th degrees of northern latitude to the shores of the Pacific. His objects were to ascertain the breadth of the continent at its broadest part, and to determine on some place on the shores of the Pacific where government might establish a post to facilitate the discovery of a northwest passage or a communication between Hudson's Bay and the Pacific Ocean. He failed twice in individual attempts to accomplish this journey. In 1774, Richard Whitworth, a member of Parliament, came into this scheme of Captain Carver's. These two gentlemen determined to take with them 50 or 60 men, artificers and mariners, to proceed up one of the branches of the Missouri, find the source of the Oregon, the Columbia, and sail down the river to its mouth. Here a fort was to be erected and the vessels built necessary to carry into execution their purposed discoveries by sea. The British government sanctioned the plan and everything was ready for the undertaking, when the American Revolution prevented it. The expedition of Sir Alexander Mackenzie is well known. In 1793, he crossed the continent and reached the Pacific Ocean in latitude 52 degrees 20 minutes 48 seconds. In latitude 52 degrees 30 minutes, he partially descended a river flowing to the south and which he erroneously supposed to be the Columbia. Some years afterward, he published an account of his journey and suggested the policy of opening an intercourse between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans and forming regular establishments through the interior and at both extremes, as well as along the coasts and islands. Thus, he thought the entire command of the fur trade of North America might be obtained from latitude 48 degrees north to the pole, excepting that portion held by the Russians. As to the American adventurers along the coast, he spoke of them as entitled to but little consideration. They would instantly disappear, he said, before a well-regulated trade. Owing to the jealousy existing between the Hudson's Bay and Northwest Company, this idea of Sir Alexander Mackenzie's was never carried into execution. The successful attempt of Monsieur Lewis and Clark was accomplished, it will be remembered, in 1804. Their course was that proposed by Captain Carver in 1774. They passed up the Missouri to its headwaters, crossed the Rocky Mountains, discovered the source of the Columbia, and followed that river down to its mouth. Here they spent the winter and retraced their steps in the spring. Their reports declared it practicable to establish a line of communication across the continent, and first inspired Mr. Astor with the design of grasping with his individual hands this great enterprise, which for years had been dubiously yet desirously contemplated by powerful associations and maternal governments. His scheme was gradually matured. Its main features were as follows. A line of trading posts was to be established along the Missouri and Columbia to the mouth of the latter, where was to be founded the chief mart. On all the tributary streams throughout this immense route were to be situated inferior posts trading directly with the Indians for their peltries. All these posts would draw upon the mart at the Columbia for their supplies of goods, and would send thither the furs collected. At this latter place also were to be built and fitted out coasting vessels for the purpose of trading along the northwest coast, returning with the proceeds of their voyages to the same general rendezvous. In this manner, the whole Indian trade, both of the coast and interior, would converge to one point. To this point, in continuation of his plan, Mr. Astor proposed to dispatch every year a ship with the necessary supplies. She would receive the peltries collected, carry them to Canton, there invest the proceeds in merchandise, and return to New York. Another point was also to be attended to. In coasting to the northwest, the ship would be brought into contact with the Russian Fur Company's establishment in that quarter, and as a rivalry might ensue, it was politic to conciliate the goodwill of that body. It depended chiefly for its supplies upon transient trading vessels from the United States. The owners of these vessels, having nothing beyond their individual interests to consult, made no scruple of furnishing the natives with firearms and were thus productive of much injury. To this effect, the Russian government had remonstrated with the United States, urging to have the traffic in arms prohibited. But no municipal law being infringed, our government could not interfere. Still, it was anxious not to offend Russia and applied to Mr. Astor for information as to the means of remedying the evil, knowing him to be well versed in all the concerns of the trade in question. This application suggested to him the idea of paying a regular visit to the Russian settlements with his annual ship. Thus, being kept regularly in supplies, they would be independent of the casual traders, who would, consequently, be excluded from the coast. This whole scheme, Mr. Astor communicated to President Jefferson, soliciting the countenance of government. The cabinet joined in warm approbation of the plan and held out assurance of every protection that could, consistently with general policy, be afforded. In speaking of the motives which actuated Mr. Astor in an enterprise so extensive, Mr. Irving, we are willing to believe, has done that high-minded gentleman no more than the simplest species of justice. He was already, says our author, wealthy beyond the ordinary desires of man, but he now aspired to that honorable fame which is awarded to men of similar scope of mind, who, by their great commercial enterprise, have enriched nations, peopled wildernesses, and extended the bounds of empire. He considered his projected establishment at the mouth of the Columbia as the emporium to an immense commerce, as a colony that would form the germ of a wide civilization, that would, in fact, carry the American population across the Rocky Mountains and spread it along the shores of the Pacific as it already animated the shores of the Atlantic. A few words in relation to the Northwest Company. This body, following out in part the suggestion of Sir Alexander Mackenzie, had already established a few trading posts on the coast of the Pacific in a region lying about 2 degrees north of the Columbia, thus throwing itself between the Russian and American territories. They would contend with Mr. Astor at an immense disadvantage, of course. They had no good post for the receipt of supplies by sea, and must get them with great risk, trouble, and expense over land. Their peltries also would have to be taken home the same way, for they were not at liberty to interfere with the East India Company's monopoly by shipping them directly to China. Mr. Astor would therefore greatly undersell them in that, the principal market. Still, as any competition would prove detrimental to both parties, Mr. A. made known his plans to the Northwest Company, proposing to interest them 1/3 in his undertaking. The British Company, however, had several reasons for declining the proposition, not the least forcible of which, we presume, was their secret intention to push on a party forthwith and forestall their arrival in establishing a settlement at the mouth of the Columbia. In the meantime, Mr. Astor did not remain idle. His first care was to procure proper coadjutors, and he was induced to seek them principally from among such clerks of the Northwest Company as were dissatisfied with their situation in that body, having served out their probationary term and being still, through want of influence, without a prospect of speedy promotion. From among these, generally men of capacity and experience in their particular business, Mr. A. obtained the services of Mr. Alexander Mackay, who had accompanied Sir Alexander Mackenzie in both of his expeditions, Mr. Donald Mackenzie, and Mr. Duncan McDougall. Mr. Wilson Price Hunt, a native citizen of New Jersey and a gentleman of great worth, was afterwards selected by Mr. Astor as his chief agent and as the representative of himself at the contemplated establishment. In June 1810, articles of agreement were entered into between Mr. Astor and these four gentlemen, acting for themselves and for the several persons who had already agreed to become, or should thereafter become, associated under the firm of the Pacific Fur Company. This agreement stipulated that Mr. A. was to be the head of the company, to manage its affairs at New York, and to furnish everything requisite for the enterprise at first cost and charges, provided an advance of more than $400,000 should not at any time be involved. The stock was to consist of 100 shares, Mr. Astor taking 50, the rest being divided among the other partners and their associates. A general meeting was to be held annually at Columbia River, where absent members might vote by proxy. The association was to continue 20 years, but might be dissolved within the first 5 years if found unprofitable. For these 5 years, Mr. A. agreed to bear all the loss that might be incurred. An agent appointed for a like term was to reside at the main establishment, and Mr. Hunt was the person first selected.